been more than a month since the World Health Organization declared the ongoing novel coronavirus outbreak a pandemic, and yesterday marked 1 month since President Trump declared COVID-19 a national emergency. Over that month, many states, including Wisconsin, issued guidelines for residents that required individuals and families to stay at home as much as possible, and people have been advised to maintain a significant amount of distance between themselves and others. There have been some exceptions to those rules for essential workers, for people to run errands, and over the month, some guidance has changed, including the CDC asking people now to wear masks when they do need to go out in public. Our next guest joins us to talk about how to evaluate these initiatives, how successful they've been, and what we should be looking for in the days to come. Patrick Remington is a professor emeritus at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back, Rob. Thanks.
Well, something that seems to keep coming up, and let me know if you're seeing this in the news reports, when we're looking at countries or we're looking at states, about 2 weeks after more stringent stay-at-home measures come into place, it seems like the curve gets flattened some. The expansion of cases seems to be going down. Is that something you're seeing?
Absolutely. Stay-at-home orders or stay safe at home absolutely work. The virus needs to go from person to person, and the less connections we have between people, the fewer opportunities we have for contagion to spread. So if everybody were to stay home, and I mean everybody, the virus might circulate within homes, but within 2 weeks it would stop circulating in a community. Obviously, we know that's not possible. There are people who get sick, and we need healthcare workers to take care of them. And we have essential services so that people can eat and go from place to place. So we need to have societies having some people work and get out. But those who can afford to stay home, either working from home or not working, then they should do that.
One of the key things seems to be the ability of some people to have the virus, not have a significantly strong symptoms, but still spread it. And we've seen case studies from China and then one from the CDC looking at a person in Chicago before safer at home orders. They had traveled within the country. They came back. They went to, I think, a birthday party, a funeral, and a dinner, and had spread the illness to more than a dozen people, a few of whom later died. That is in some ways the most insidious and hard to control part of this and the hardest to wrap our heads around. What do you think?
Yes, it certainly is. This virus is unique in its ability to be contagious well before an individual gets symptomatic. And that makes the spread insidious, that people are spreading the virus when they feel well, either before they get symptoms, and some people never get symptoms. They remain asymptomatic. And those individuals, we've seen outbreak after outbreak where those individuals, by no fault of their own, they didn't know that they were contagious, have spread it to others. And it makes the control even more difficult.
One question I see coming up again and again, Dr. Remington, is how we're accounting for the death toll related to COVID-19. Concerns on one hand that we are undercounting it, that in some cases people have died of this, whether in a hospital or at home, and never been tested, and they don't get counted in the overall toll. And then some people critical of a CDC guideline that says, even if you don't have a test, but all the medical evidence suggests that this was COVID-19, you should count it. Then people are saying, hold on, you're going to overcount the illness. What do you make of that back and forth?
Well, we've known for a long time that death certificates and attributing cause of death is a difficult thing to do. We rely on the judgment of physicians or coroners to make that decision. You can't be absolutely strict and say you have to have a positive COVID test. If a clinician, in his or her opinion, thinks that this death was related to symptoms that were classic for COVID, that happened in a community, in an area with community spread, maybe even with a contact with a known case, then that's certainly reasonable to say that this is a COVID attributed death. I think those are at the margin, though. Those are not really the central numbers. Most of the numbers of deaths that we're seeing are from people who've been diagnosed, have been very, very sick, and have been in a hospital, and those are absolutely confirmed cases.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at some of the latest public health-related news about COVID-19. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Dr. Remington, I wonder, looking back, it seems like a big turning point here, a thing that could have made things a lot worse, was when the NBA first said, hey, we're going to stop having games, then the NCAA championships, and then at the state level, state basketball and other championships canceled. Heartbreaking, I know, for everybody involved, but it seems like if those had happened, we might be in a much worse situation. I know it's hard to have what-if scenarios. How important were those decisions?
Well, those turned out to be incredibly important decisions. I have to be honest, back in February 7th, when you and I spoke, we had one case in the state of Wisconsin. And I, at that time, thought that we would be seeing an increase, but I didn't think we would be seeing the pandemic that we have today. I thought when I heard that the NBA had been canceled, I thought that that was perhaps too cautious. A good type of caution, but too much caution. And now looking back, it's absolutely not the case. Those decisions were hard decisions to make economically and from an entertainment perspective, but they were absolutely the right decisions. We've seen terrible outbreaks in places where people continued to gather, whether it be a funeral or a choir practice. And if we had had large gatherings like basketball games, we know we would have been seeing people not able to even get to the hospital, let alone get on a ventilator.
I want to start looking toward the future now. Hopefully someday we're going to get a vaccine and or effective treatments that improve people's chance of survival and chance of avoiding long hospitalizations. But that, if and when it's going to happen, is a long way off, and we're probably not going to have full safer at home until then. What kind of mid-level steps can you see us taking in the time between full-on safer at home and hopefully something that's going to make this less of a big deal?
Well, almost 2 months ago, we talked about the difference between the public health response, between isolation, which is what you do with an individual who's sick. You isolate them so they don't expose others. And then quarantine, which is used to put people effectively in isolation, but they don't have the illness. They have a probability of being exposed. What we've done with the stay at home or stay safer at home order is basically quarantine everybody. And that's an overreach, really. It's not very efficient. It's certainly effective because if everybody stays home, the disease will not spread. But what we need to do is use quarantine like we would for any other infectious disease. Identify people who are sick, identify their contacts, and then quarantine them. And so we really have to be smarter with quarantine. That takes a tremendous amount of work. It takes really an army of people, of public health workers, to go out and not only identify cases with better testing, but also then track down all the potential contacts. And it's going to take the public to agree to that. As we begin to go back to work, you may get a call saying that you've potentially been exposed and you need to be quarantined. And that's going to be different. Right now, basically everybody who's non-essential is quarantined. And we know that can't continue forever. We need to use smarter approaches and more targeted quarantines for those people who've been potentially exposed to a case. And I see that coming. I've talked to colleagues at the State Health Department, and they're gearing up for that. But that takes a great number of people to roll up their sleeves and get to work in the public health trenches.
We continue our conversation about public health initiatives and how they've impacted the spread of COVID-19. Dr. Patrick Remington stays with us from UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And we'll go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Rick is with us in Tripoli. Rick, hello. Rick, are you there? I don't hear Rick. Let's try Sarah then in Madison. Sarah, hello.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, what did you want to bring up, Sarah?
Hi, I'm a hairstylist in Madison, and I haven't been working, and I'm supposed to go back to work on April 24th, which I miss working, but I also feel a little nervous because of the fact that I'm going to be around people, and then is this going to cause another surge, or do you see that the state is going to close for another month? Because the other hairstylists are also concerned about whether or not we're going to be reopening on that day.
Sarah, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Remington, I know there's a lot going into that decision of whether to extend it, but what are your thoughts on what Sarah brought up?
Well, I think we're on the cusp of seeing the pandemic, the number of new cases level off, but clearly we're not out of the woods. I think we'll have some hard decisions to make. Obviously, it's up to the leadership at the state health department and the governor's office. But I think we're not ready to go back to work. I think, if anything, we may see certain sectors being able to go back for those essential workers, perhaps people who have already established immunity by being ill or can demonstrate that they have immunity. But I think the general going back to work won't happen so soon. I think we've made great progress. It's been an effective response, but we need to buy more time so that we have the capacity to take care of sick people and so that we can really figure this out, not just to make it up as we go, but to learn lessons and go back to work with the resources that we need, with the public health infrastructure, so that if somebody were to get sick and before they went to the hair salon in Madison, that they would have been called, identified, and put into quarantine so that you don't have people going around who are incubating the disease, exposing people who are back to work. And so we're not quite there. That's going to be like having an army for the census, but we need an army for people to do contact tracing, helping people who have been exposed to just stay home until we're sure that they're not going to get ill.
Sarah, thanks for calling. Best to you either way. I know there's a lot to worry about with your livelihood on the one hand and your health on the other. Back to your calls now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hello.
Hi. If I understand correctly, we're supposed to stay about 6 feet apart because the droplets from our breath or whatever would fall to the ground or sidewalk. And if that's the case, well, what if people are walking outside on a windy day like today? Would the wind keep the droplets with the virus airborne?
Thanks for the call, Dr. Remington. I know a lot of people are trying to model the, I guess, aerodynamics of this virus.
Well, there is some fake news on the internet about a study that wasn't actually a study. It was just an idea somebody had that these particles might stay airborne if you're running or bicycling. I think the most important thing is to use practical common sense, that 6 feet is a guideline. And that's about how far a sneeze or a cough, the droplets that come out from an ill person, would go. But if you're outside and the wind is blowing, you might be a little further. You might want to stay a little further apart. But then the other argument would be that it is outdoors and it's less likely, those viral particles are less likely to be suspended in air. So I think the idea is just don't gather closely. Certainly, things like shaking hands or being in a tight space with anybody outside of your family is not a good idea. And just use common sense if you're out of doors. But I encourage people to get out, to go for a walk. But if you're not within your nuclear family, people you're living with, keep your distance. 6 feet is a minimum. Why not be a little extra careful and stay a little further away?
Thanks a lot for that call. Dr. Remington, in our last minute and a half or so, you've mentioned the need for, in effect, an army of people to do contact tracing. Sounds like we need a lot more testing. Do you see us ramping up to have those things in place so that we can safely end things like safer at home orders?
Yes, I do. These are not impossible things. Obviously, we know we were woefully unprepared for this pandemic. We did not have the testing capacity in place. Our government state labs and the CDC lab just didn't have the capacity. We're ramping that up every minute of every day, and I think we're going to see more and more testing so that we not only test somebody who's critically ill to know their diagnosis, but we test people who have mild symptoms, even people who've been exposed, so that we can learn more about this disease and then do contact tracing. That's really smart contact tracing, not just what we've done, which is basically quarantine everybody because we don't have the capacity to do the kind of work that we need to do. And that's just finding the people. I know people are volunteering. There's a website. If you want to volunteer, you can do online work for the state health department, but they're going to need to get people to actually be boots on the ground, to walk from house to house, to talk to people, to find out what if someone is ill, who they've been in contact with, and make sure those contacts have been quarantined.
We'll leave it there for now. Dr. Remington, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob, and stay safe.
You too. That's Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about public health efforts and COVID-19 and looking to the future. By the way, we've got a call from Aaron in Whitewater who mentioned that he just got out of donating blood himself. I understand there's a big demand for that. Aaron said there was a remote donation location, made him feel like he's making a difference. You can share your own story if you feel like you're doing something that made a difference or you're looking to do something. Email us ideas@wpr.org.